I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Attorneys for Pennsylvania State Senator Larry Farnese are preparing for battle. It comes after federal prosecutors indicted him yesterday for allegedly buying the support of a Democratic Party leader in 2011. The case raises the question, when is a political favor a crime? The U.S. Supreme Court has a pending case dealing with the issue, and Farnese's attorneys think the outcome could affect their case. Details from WHYY's Bobby Allen.
The Supreme Court case Farnese's legal team is excited about deals with former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. He was convicted after receiving lots of money and gifts from a businessman who wanted a seat at the table. And the guy did get the meetings he wanted, but the former governor never told any officials what to do. And as former federal judge Nancy Gartner said on Slate's Amicus podcast, that distinction makes a huge difference. She uses the hypothetical of Mrs. Jones being the business person looking for access.
Talk to Mrs. Jones. I think she has something interesting to say. Or talk to Mrs. Jones and do what she said. Right? You can think of all sorts of comments along that continuum.
Justices on both sides of the political aisle seem skeptical that urging people to talk, even after receiving some money, should be a crime. Farnese, meanwhile, is accused of sending $6,000 of campaign money to Bard College to help a committee woman's daughter do a study abroad program. Prosecutors say that after that, she supported Farnese to become a ward leader. That committee woman, Ellen Chapman, was also indicted.
Is this such a problem issue that the federal government ought to poke its nose in it?
Former federal prosecutor Peter Vera says this kind of bribery case isn't always clear-cut.
One prosecutor in Connecticut may decide that this type of a case is worth prosecuting, and somebody in Arizona may say no.
In a statement, Farnese's attorney says politics in the real world is based on relationships and favors, and the feds, they're just trying to criminalize well-accepted political activity. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
In Pennsylvania, teacher layoff decisions can only be made according to who has the least seniority. As Keystone Crossroads' Kevin McCoy reports, the General Assembly passed a bill this week to change that law, though it's facing a veto pledge from Governor Tom Wolf.
The bill does two things. One, it allows districts to make layoff decisions based on budget shortfalls. Right now, they're not supposed to do that and can only furlough teachers, for instance, when cutting whole academic programs. Two, it says that teachers rated as failing by the state's new teacher evaluation framework should be the first to let go if layoffs are needed. Seniority would still be the law of the land among teachers with top ratings.
Well, this is just common sense.
Jake Corman, a Center County Republican, is the Senate Majority Leader.
Right now, it's strictly seniority. And so whether you're the best teacher or not, seniority dictates who stays and who goes. It's last in, first out.
The bill passed the Senate this week with the support of most Republicans. All Democrats opposed it. It passed the House last summer with the same dynamics. Governor Wolf has promised a veto, saying he supports seniority protections.
I think it's on the whole, a fair and just way to look at education. I think teachers want to do a good job. I think they want to be treated fairly, and I think they're treated fairly. They treat their students and the communities they serve fairly.
Some, including House Republican spokesman Steve Miskin, link Wolf's opposition to the bill to his strong support from the teachers' union.
Who is he really supporting? Is he supporting the kids and the best teachers possible, or is he supporting really the unions, you know, his union backers? It's a question.
But even some proponents of the bill have major concerns about it. As executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators, Jim Buckhite looks out for the interests of superintendents, who tend to favor using teacher evaluations in making staffing decisions. But
there are valid concerns about using that measure as the means to determine who should be furloughed.
30% of a teacher's rating is now based on student performance on state standardized tests, and great teachers in poor performing schools can come out looking bad, while lesser teachers in better performing schools can seem great.
It's a terribly flawed system that needs to be corrected. And is caught up in the politics in Harrisburg right now.
The state's largest teachers union, PSEA, agrees with that assessment and echoes Wolf, who says the real focus should be on giving schools the resources they need to prevent layoffs from happening in the first place, with Kiever as spokesman.
The General Assembly ought to be talking about how to invest in education.
In the larger political dynamic, additional education funding often flows from Harrisburg only with strings attached. And even after a veto, Majority Leader Cormann says this bill is the sort of accountability measure Governor Wolf will have to swallow to get a funding boost in this year's budget.
If we're going to put more money into school districts, we want to make sure that it's used to the best interest of the students.
Earlier this year, the legislature and governor came to consensus on a bill that postpones a standardized testing requirement for high school graduation. In concert, the two bills make teachers more accountable for test results while taking consequences away from students. Kevin McCrory, Keystone Crossroads.
Last month, we reported on a story about a severed cow head left outside a Hindu cow sanctuary in northeast Pennsylvania. The state police says it's caught the perpetrators and that they're admitting to it as a hate crime. Rama Reddy Raghavan reports.
When Pennsylvania State Trooper Carrie Gula showed up at the Lakshmi Cow Sanctuary in Stroudsburg, she was flummoxed. She was unsure as to what to make of the severed cow head left outside the sanctuary run by Dr. Shankar Shastri.
My first impression when I arrived on scene, it was alarming. After speaking to Mr. Shastri, it was very apparent that he was very disturbed by this. And getting to talk to him and getting to educated about the Hindu religion, it was at that time that I consider this an act of violence.
State police spokesman Trooper David Peters says their investigations led them to 19-year-old Kimberly McKee and 25-year-old Ricky Strausser. He says they lived in the neighborhood and were upset that Shastri, after buying the land, closed trails to off-road vehicles.
We believe that it was kind of concocted or conspired in reference to the doctor buying his property and cutting off certain routes that might have been used for ATVs, and believing that if they did this particular activity that it would scare him to move from the property. And obviously, as we can see, that didn't work. It only united the community a lot better.
The presence of a Ku Klux Klan poster in a neighbor's window caused police to call in the FBI to see if this was connected to an organized hate group.
As far as I understand, that there wasn't any evidence to indicate that it was nothing more than what they transpired to do here was to put the cow head to startle and harass the doctor.
The poster was eventually traced to Strausser.
I believe there are some white supremacist ideals that exist with one of the actors, but to the extent they carried him out beyond this, there's not too much there except for some literature and some basic ideologies.
After drawing police attention, McKee and Strausser approached Shastri to apologize. They then confess to the police. Shastri says he is now at peace.
No question about it, yeah. More at peace, you know, than before this was announced. And especially after talking to the two perpetrators face to face, you know.
Were they truly sorry?
Well, it's hard to say, but the girl was really genuine, I thought.
Trooper Peters says the charges that currently amount to a misdemeanor offense will be heard before a district magistrate on June 10th.
Charges were ethnic intimidation, harassment, disorderly conduct, loitering and prowling at night, criminal trespass, and I believe scattering rubbish. We believe we have the evidence and the support to go forward with charging someone with what we would consider a hate crime.
One of Shastri's neighbors, Lancelot Owens, who's been living in the area for 10 years, says this is not typical behavior for local residents.
We have a cross-section of all type of ethnic people in this neighborhood, and we haven't had any problems like that before. So I'm glad that this is behind us, and we all go forward from here.
Bruce Labar, a retired dairy farmer, has known Shastri for 20 years. He's upset that people would do such a thing just because they couldn't access some trails.
It wasn't right, you know. I don't think, you know. Hey, your land is your land. It's not mine. So he has all the rights in the world to close it off.
The community has helped solve this crime by coming forward to cooperate and offer tips. Trooper Peter says he knows it's tough for people to report hate crimes, but he's encouraging everyone to speak up.
Don't stand back and let this happen to you. We will investigate it. We will do everything in our power to bring those individuals that committed that crime to justice for you. Unfortunately, we need support. We need evidence to do those things, but we don't want you to think, oh, they can't do anything.
Although Shastri is relieved, he's still anxious, especially for the security and well-being of his bovines. The police have promised to spend a day with him, as well as at the local Hindu temple and Asha Vidya, to figure out ways to beef up their current security. For WHYY, I'm Rama Reddy Raghavan.
Still ahead, a trio of Philadelphia schools received grants, allowing them to turn up the volume on their music programs.
This energy and this support from every principal, from Department of Education, was really fantastic. And we thought this is exactly what Philadelphia needs.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Each year, hundreds of people donate their bodies to science in Pennsylvania, and each year, the state board that oversees the donations conducts a ceremony honoring those who made that sacrifice. It's geared toward the families, but as WHYY's Alana Gordon reports, medical students from around the region lead the service.
Families of those who donated their bodies pack into an auditorium at Penn. On stage, first-year medical students from around the city, students who've just completed anatomy lab, sing, read poems, recite names. They don't know much about the lives their cadavers once led, but this is a moment to step back and reflect.
Good night, angel. Be with you.
It all meant a lot to David Adler, who came in from Yardley.
My wife was a teacher. She taught for 33 years.
Her death coincided with the start of school.
She was off to do what she always did about this time of the year. She was off to educate.
A lesson that no textbook, no professor, no computer could ever truly teach us.
That was referred to several times today. And that's the way I see it, and it just completes the circle.
The ceremony has been going on for at least 40 years in Philly, and it's a ritual that's becoming increasingly common at med schools across the country. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
Since its founding 4.5 years ago, PactForAnimals.org has honored the importance of the people-pet bond by preventing the permanent separation of animals and their owners due to unforeseen circumstances. Let's learn more about the nonprofit foster program's impact on the Philadelphia region and beyond with Pact founder and president Buzz Miller. Buzz, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Oh, it's a wonderful pleasure to be here with you, Dave.
Buzz, PAC stands for People Plus Animals Equal Companions Together. What spurred you to put that equation together and then to act on PAC?
I realized that there was something missing in general in the shelter rescue business in this country of companion animals, principally cats and dogs. PAC not only saves the life of an animal, it also gives tremendous psychological boost to the owners. We started fostering animals from a couple months to up to 2 years from military people. We've worked with all five branches of the U.S. military, and for one reason or another, they could not take the animal with them. So we put them in actual foster homes, and we've had animals flown or driven to us here in the Delaware Valley to be put in our local homes from, I think it's about 26 states. And if for some reason the home wasn't capable to take the animal back, we then found a permanent home for an adoption, but we're really not in the adoption business. We're the only long-term foster that fosters animals for people, families, single people. All we want to know is, through a lot of questions and talking to them on the phone, that they really want this animal back, and this animal is a material part of their life.
Given the overarching need and your self-description as a little organization, to what extent do you partner with the Women's Humane Society, or PAWS, or the SPCA?
They all know about us in a particular case that we're suitable for, where it's military or hospitalization, they know to call us. But our major source at this point is just networking and word of mouth.
Your passion for this foster cause is obvious, and it's also evidenced in your personal story. Take a moment and explain.
Well, it was a process that built up for years. And when I was about 60 years old, I said to my wife, I don't want to practice law anymore. I'm tired of sitting here on a real estate deal, shuffling 100 pieces of paper. I wanted to do something that had meaning. I didn't feel I was making a difference in the world by rescuing animals and changing people's lives. And especially through PAC, what we do, I was making a difference. There's three winners. We always save the animal's life. The foster homes are volunteers. And on the applications, it says, I want to help a kid at CHOP. We've had plenty of kids with cancer, life-threatening cancer at CHOP. We work with all the children's hospitals, all the veterans' hospitals, and adult hospitals in the Delaware Valley and now throughout the country. We are changing the lives of children, changing the lives of military. And we've even had fostering for homeless people that are living in parks under certain circumstances. In law, one side is trying to beat up the other. If you're buying a building, you want to buy it as cheap as you can. If you're selling it, you want to sell it for as much as you can. I was tired of that after 35 years, but I love what I do.
Buzz Miller, founder and president of the nonprofit animal foster program, PACT. This week, the Philadelphia Orchestra will perform with soloist Long Long, a superstar pianist in the classical world. While in town, Long Long also performed with 75 young players in a room full of pianos. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the musician is throwing his support behind music education in public schools.
To play Schubert with one hand is one thing, but to play it with 150 hands is something else. Long Long, the flamboyant classical star, wrangled a room full of children and teenagers from Schubert and Brahms as part of the Philadelphia Orchestra's Play-In. That's a series of events inviting amateur musicians to play en masse with professionals. In the past, a clutch of cellists have played with Yo-Yo Ma, and a herd of harpists played with the orchestra's own Elizabeth Hainan. The event allowed aspiring musicians to play with one of the most recognized pianists today and ply him with questions. It also enabled Long Long to advocate for music education in public schools and put his money where his mouth is. The Long Long International Music Foundation will contribute piano labs, those are dozens of full-size keyboards networked electronically, to three schools in the Philadelphia School District. The foundation will also provide a stipend for each school to hire a full-time music teacher for 3 years. The three elementary schools are Fox Chase, Edward T. Steele, and Southwark. Their music programs range from relatively robust to non-existent. The director of music education for the whole school district is Frank Makos, and he says these three-year grants give the district time and resources to develop a better district-wide music plan.
So rolling it out in a school where, like Fox Chase, where the climate and culture has been strong and stable for a number of years, as opposed to Steele, where it's a new principal and they had some turmoil and changeover within the last few years, to measure the consistencies and the differences in the variations. That'll help us inform our models as we go forward and do this, scale it out across the district.
56 schools across the country applied for the Long Long Foundation grant called Keys of Inspiration. Four were selected, one in Chicago and three in Philly. Foundation CEO Lucas Barwinski determined that the Philadelphia schools were most likely to continue music programs after the grant ends.
This is what we found here in Philadelphia, and this energy and this support from every principal, from Department of Education, was really fantastic. And we thought this is exactly what Philadelphia needs.
The schools will have new pianos, teachers, and materials starting in the fall. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production today from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.